You may come forward, wise men.
Long live the king!
Have you discovered the cause of the phenomenon?
No, your majesty.
You're supposed to be the wisest of the wise men. You claim to know all things. Mm. Why have you failed to have this thing...
But, your majesty, this is different. This has never happened before in all the history of the world. It's against nature. It can't happen.
It is happening.
Yes, we know, your majesty.
Perhaps our sundials and our glasses have ceased to keep proper time.
Oh, would that were true. This day has already been 47 hours long. There's not the slightest doubt of that.
Then I want to know why, immediately.
Yes, your majesty.
Yes, your majesty. Yes, your majesty. Stop talking and find out who is causing the sun to stand still. Yes,
but,
and why.
But, your majesty, no human power could possibly cause the sun to stand still for 24 hours. It must be the power of the gods. But which god and by whose instigation, we haven't the slightest idea.
I'll give you exactly 2 hours to find out who and why. 2 hours, and then off come your heads.
Oh, dear.
Hello there, everyone.
Hi again, boys and girls.
In just a moment, Uncle Dan is going to bring us another exciting Bible story as adapted from Holy Scripture. But first, Uncle Dan, may I ask you a question?
Go right ahead, Aunt Sue.
In your preview, we heard it said that the sun stood still in the heavens for 24 hours. That didn't really happen, did it?
As strange as it may seem, it really did happen under unusual circumstances, as recorded in the Old Testament, Joshua, chapters 9 and 10. I call the story...
The Longest Day in History.
Almost 3,000 years ago, there existed a country in the very center of Canaan called Gibeon. The people of Gibeon were not under the rule of a king, but were governed by senators. There arose in Gibeon an emergency, a great and pressing emergency. So a special meeting of the senators was called.
Fellow members of the Senate, it is our sworn duty to protect and preserve our country. Up to the present time, our walled cities, our warriors and our show of strength has kept potential enemies from our gates. But now, a new danger threatens. A crafty enemy is camped on our very doorstep. We must find some way to stop this enemy, to ward off this danger before it is too late.
I assume, Senator from Shafira, that you refer to the Israelites.
I most certainly do.
It is my opinion that the Israelites are far overrated. We have nothing to fear from them. Authentic information has it that they are merely an unorganized band of prowlers seeking small prey wherever it may be found.
Your information is incorrect, Senator. Israel is an orderly, well-disciplined nation seeking to establish their kingdom right here in Canaan, after dislodging us and all the other nations now occupying the land.
Such a thing is impossible, utterly and absolutely impossible.
You heard, didn't you, what Israel recently did to the kings of Ai and Jericho?
Yes, but I also heard what the armies of Amalek did to Israel.
That was over 40 years ago. Since then, Israel has won wars from some of the most powerful nations on earth. The giants of Bashan, King Arad and his mighty army.
Yes, don't forget, my dear Senator, that Israel has also lost battles. King Balak of Moab, for instance, defeated Israel with a minimum of fighting.
And why? Because King Balak was wise, smart. He hired Balaam of Mesopotamia, and Balaam caused Israel to worship strange gods and fall prey
to all... That isn't the real reason.
You have inside information, I suppose?
I have intelligence, a normal amount at least. It is obvious that Israel's fortunes of war waver between good to bad because of their leader, Moses. Moses is a meek man. He detests violence. Why, he even marched his people all the way around Edom merely because he did not wish to oppose the desires of the king of Edom.
But my dear Senator from Beeroth, for once we agree, though I doubt if you realize it. In fact, I doubt if you even realize that Israel has a new leader, a young man named Joshua, and he is far from meek. And violence, he loves it.
Moses, isn't their leader anymore?
No, he isn't. And since Joshua became their leader, they have attacked and vanquished in rapid succession the strongholds of Jericho and Ai. Then they did an unheard-of thing. They marched, 1 million strong, all the way to Mount Ebal through the very midst of enemy nations. Yet not one of those nations dared attack Israel. And why? Because those nations feared Israel. They knew that Israel is strong and unconquerable.
Fellow senators, I'm forced to agree with the honorable senator from Shephira. We do face a new danger. A crafty enemy is camped on our doorstep. We must find some way to stop them.
The Israelites are strong.
One moment, please, senators. Senators, I may have a solution to our dilemma. First, I'd like to ask every senator one question, a simple question. Now, which is the most important, our country or our people? That's the answer I want from each of you.
Well, I'll have to admit that my life is pretty important to me.
And so it is with every citizen of Gibeon.
My life is certainly important.
Thank you, senators. Senators, we are all agreed, obviously, that it is far better to save our lives and the lives of our people than to save only the identity of our country. The senator from Shephira seems to have a plan to accomplish just that. The senator from Shephira.
If it please the Senate, I should like to ask for an adjournment for 2 hours. There is one small item I would like to confirm, so as to be sure of my facts, before I propose a solution to our dilemma.
Adjournment granted.
Senators from Gibeon, I am now ready to make my report and offer a way of salvation for our people. I am sure I need not recite the history of our enemy, the Israelites. We are all well acquainted with the fact that a supernatural power has attended them since their release from captivity in Egypt. We have heard repeatedly that it is their God, called Jehovah, who exercises this supernatural power.
Yes, we've heard those things, yes, but are they true?
I'm sure we can rely on them as facts, Senator.
Then why is it that the Israelites are sometimes defeated in battle?
Ah, my dear Senator, you have hit upon the very core of the problem. And the answer is simply that when Israel does something to displease their God, he forsakes them and they lose battles.
Dawns the light. All we have to do is to make Jehovah angry at Israel, and we can subdue them.
Oh, others have tried that, Senator, and have succeeded only for a short time.
Well, what do you have in mind?
Well, I thought it over, and it looked on the surface as if Joshua, when he took over the leadership from Moses, pursued a different course than Moses had. He seemed to rely less on their God, Jehovah, and more on the strength of his army. That is the point I wish to confirm and why I asked for an adjournment. I am glad I did, because I was wrong.
Joshua does rely on their God?
Even more so, if possible, than Moses did. The city of Jericho was overthrown by a direct miracle of their God. Then Israel's recent march all the way to Mount Ebal and back to Gilgal was for the explicit purpose of renewing their covenant with their God and thus receive his continued help in conquering Canaan.
Senator, you're spending a lot of time talking about Israel's God. There must be a reason.
There is, a very definite reason. I wish to establish the fact that Jehovah, Israel's God, is truly a God with definite powers, something no other God that I know about has. I also wanted each of you to realize that there is no hope of conquering Israel or Israel's God.
You repeat yourself, Senator.
Only for purposes of emphasis.
Well, let's have the meat of your proposal, Senator.
That's very simple. If we can't conquer them, join them.
Join the Israelites?
Become one of them?
Abandon our gods and worship theirs?
We can't do that. We can't betray our own country like that.
Senator, Senator. Wait. On second thought, I think perhaps the senator from Shephira might be right. Surely if we go to them and surrender, they'll treat us kindly. Why, they might even permit us to remain a nation.
I wish that were possible, but it isn't. I've learned on good authority that Joshua at Mount Ebal promised Jehovah not to enter into any league with any Canaanite country. Joshua was also warned against entering into any sort of traffic with idolaters of Canaan. We fit into both categories.
Which means they will not accept our surrender.
Exactly.
But you yourself just suggested that we enter into league with them, become part of them. How can this be done if they refuse to even confer with us?
By deception, my dear Senator from Beeroth. By deception.
Oh, well, I guess anything is fair in love and war.
Now, my plan in detail is this. We will... Yes, dear?
There's a messenger here from headquarters. Says that some sort of delegation from somewhere wishes to see you.
Delegation from where?
Well, the messenger doesn't seem to know.
Well, ask him to come in here a moment. Oh, there you are.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Samuel. You say there's a delegation to see me?
Yes, sir.
What sort of delegation?
Ambassadors, I guess, sir.
You don't know where they're from?
No, sir, but I think they come from some country a long ways away.
Did they say so?
No, sir, but they... Well, they looked it. They're all covered with dust. Their clothes are torn and old, and their sandals are patched, and their provisions are even moldy. They must be from a faraway country, sir.
Yes, it would seem like it, wouldn't it? Yeah, tell them I'll be there shortly.
Yes.
Here he comes.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning.
I'm Joshua. You wish to see me?
Yes, sir. We desire... our people desire a treaty with you and your people.
I am prohibited from making an alliance with any idolatrous or Canaanite nation.
We are from a distant country, beyond the limits of Canaan. Does not our appearance confirm this?
May I ask your motive in wishing an alliance with Israel?
In our faraway home, we have heard of the marvels and wonders your God Jehovah has performed. We wish to know more about this wonderful God and become a partaker of his wonders.
You wish to worship Israel's God?
Yes, sir.
A worthy ambition. Yet, I must be sure that you are not Canaanites. Peradventure you are, we cannot enter into any league or alliance with you.
We are your servants.
You haven't told me who you really are or from whence you came.
Witness this bread, sir. The day we left our country, we took it hot from the baking oven. It is now hard and moldy.
And these bottles of wine, when we left home, they were new. Look at them now, rent with much usage.
And our clothes and shoes are become old by reason of the long journey here to your land.
We are from a distant country, sir, a country outside the boundaries of Canaan.
All right, we will enter into league with you. But I'll have to call a general meeting to ratify the treaty. In the meantime, Samuel here will take care of your immediate needs.
Thank you, John.
Elders of Israel, ambassadors from Gibeon, people, we are gathered here to ratify a treaty with our friends from a faraway country. Senators, do you hereby agree and swear that you and your people will renounce idol worship?
We do.
Do you further swear and agree to henceforth worship and obey Jehovah, God of Israel?
We do.
Prince of the Congregation of Israel, you have heard the representatives of this faraway land swear allegiance to Jehovah. Do you herewith publicly acknowledge their sworn allegiance?
We do.
And do you, by your oath, ratify this treaty? Do you assure them of continued life in our midst? Will you protect and succor them even as we do our own families and nation?
We will.
People of Israel, let it therefore be known this day that Israel has ratified and made treaty between the peoples of Israel and our neighbors far to the south.
Good luck.
luck and Godspeed on your long journey home, Senators.
Thank you, Joshua.
Our people will be happy to know that our mission has been successful.
Give them my personal greetings and salutations.
We will, Joshua. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Exactly 3 days later.
Good evening, dear.
Are you all right, Joshua?
I've come to know. No harm, if that's what you mean.
I've been terribly worried about you ever since I heard the news.
The people wouldn't harm me.
I understand they were pretty angry.
They were very indignant, it's true. And I can't blame them. And it is my fault. I believe those ambassadors.
Well, they were clever.
No doubt about that. Old clothes, a ripped wine bottle, moldy bread.
Is there anything you can do about it?
No, it's too late for that. We gave them our promise, and we must keep it.
But it was received by lies, deception. Surely you don't have to keep promises gotten under those conditions, Joshua.
The obligation to which one's word is pledged, if it doesn't bind him to an act of sin, must be held sacred.
A short time later, after 3 days of travel, Israel arrived at Gibeon, the central city and stronghold of the Gibeonites. Then, and only then, did the Israelites realize with whom they had made the treaty of peace. As soon as possible, Joshua called the senators of Gibeon to a special meeting.
We are going to let you and your people live, because we swore to it by the Lord God of Israel.
We are thankful, Joshua.
You realize that you secured the treaty by deception and fraud.
We are guilty, Joshua, and we humbly ask your pardon.
Nevertheless, you are to be punished.
We submit ourselves to your keeping, Joshua. Do unto us what seems right and good.
By your deception, you have passed sentence upon yourselves. You deceived us by wearing of old and worn-out garments, the garments of the poor and the servant. You are sentenced to wear such clothing forever and ever. You shall be the servants of the tabernacle. You will hew wood for the fires, carry water, perform all the menial tasks asked of you.
Even though servitude is a disgrace, we gladly accept your terms, Joshua, in exchange for our lives.
Thus the Gibeonites became servants to the congregation of Israel and to the tabernacle of God. Throughout all their generations, their garb of poverty and their servile condition testified to God's hatred of falsehood and deception. There were others in the land of Canaan who looked with dismay on the submission of the Gibeonites to Israel. One such man was Adoni-Zedek, king at Jerusalem. Hastily he called a conference with four other kings of Canaan.
Aram, king of Hebron, Aram, king of Jarmuth, Japhia, king of Lachish, and Debir, king of Eglon. I shall not waste time on formalities. I am deeply concerned over the fact that Gibeon made peace with Joshua and the Israelites. If we do not punish Gibeon, other nations may follow suit and ally themselves with Israel too. Such alliances will strengthen Israel. This we cannot allow. Therefore, we must form a confederacy to smite Gibeon. If we act swiftly and surprise the Gibeonites, our combined armies can annihilate them in short order. Do I have your approval and help?
We agree with you.
Very well, then. I shall lead our combined armies against Gibeon. Long live the kings of Canaan!
Senator, the five kings of the mountains are marching against us.
Their armies?
The armies of the five nations combined.
You must be mistaken.
Oh, I am not. They are only a few days' journey away.
How does it happen that we haven't learned of this before? Well,
they're moving rapidly to surprise us, no doubt.
We'll have to appeal to Joshua for help.
Joshua? Oh, he won't help us. He'll be glad of the chance to refuse help, to pay us back for the treachery we practiced on him.
It's our only chance. Hurry, get a messenger ready to go to Gilgal at once.
You're going away, Joshua, to fight the five kings of the mountains?
Yes, dear, they're marching against Gibeon.
Well, if I were you, I wouldn't risk the lives of Israel's soldiers for Gibeon. They deceived and cheated you. Why help them now?
Danger to the Gibeonites is danger also to Israel. The cities of Gibeon command the passes to central and southern Palestine, which must remain under our control if we are to conquer all of Canaan.
Well, it seems rather foolish to me.
Also, my dear, Gibeon have kept their covenant with us. They actually have ceased to worship idols and are completely submitted to our control. I feel under obligation to protect them.
Have you sought God's counsel in this matter?
I did. He said unto me, "Fear them not, Joshua, for I shall deliver them into your hand."
So Joshua left Gilgal, he and all the men of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. By marching all night, they arrived at Gibeon by morning. Scarcely had the five kings of the mountains mustered their armies to fight Gibeon before Joshua was upon them.
To the battle, men! And remember, God is on our side! On to victory, men! On to victory!
Greetings, Joshua!
You a senator fighting?
Side by side with you and your men, sir. And thanks for coming to our rescue.
We are brothers and must help one another. Forward there, men. Press your advantage. On to victory!
General! General, call a retreat of our forces up to the mountain pass of Bethoron. There we will reassemble for another attack.
Having laboriously gained the plateau atop Beth Horon, the armies of the five kings did not reassemble for another attack. Instead, they rushed down the precipitous descent on the other side. And the Lord cast down great hailstones, and they that died with the hailstones were more than was slain by the sword. As the armies of the five kings continued their headlong fight, Joshua and his men gained the top of Beth Horon.
Men! The enemy will attempt to find refuge in hiding places in the mountain strongholds and caves. We must not permit this. If they are not fully routed, they will rally and renew their attack. Even though we have already accounted for many thousands of the enemy, and God's hailstones have accounted for many thousands more, there are still many thousands to rout.
But Joshua, sir, it is nearly evening. Darkness will soon be upon us, and surely the enemy will escape in the dark.
Oh, we need a longer day to accomplish God's purpose.
Then spake Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And Joshua said in the sight of Israel,
Sun, stand still upon Gibeon. Moon, stand still in the valley of Ajalon.
Long live the king.
Well, wise man, have you yet discovered why the sun stood still for almost 24 hours?
Yes, your majesty. Joshua, the leader of Israel, commanded the sun to stand still, and it did.
Joshua? He's a man, isn't he?
Oh, well, yes, your majesty.
Well, a man can't command the sun to stand still.
But Joshua did, your majesty, and it obeyed him.
I don't believe it.
Oh, well, it's unbelievable, your majesty, yet true. Joshua commanded the sun to stand still so there would be enough daylight for him and his army to defeat the combined armies of the mountains.
What sort of man is it that has the power to control the very elements?
Well, it is said, Your Majesty, that Joshua spends hours upon his knees praying to his God. Evidently, the men of prayer are the men of power.
And the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and hasted not to go down about a whole day.